All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico, I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for president of the United States, currently in the race for governor of Texas. And today I've got Ethan James, also known as Venn Diagram Boy on Instagram. He's a journalism student living in Australia, and he wants to talk about some other options outside of the two-party system, not necessarily libertarians. So, of course, everybody knows I hate the two-party system. This should be interesting. But before we get started, if you're watching the live streams, please make sure to like and share, comment, and ask questions. Chime in. We want to hear your opinions as well on these extremely controversial subjects, because we know all of you out there love the two-party system. Haha, I know you don't. You hate it just as much as I do. And of course, head over to taxationstheft.info and support us by buying everything. Collect the whole set. Get everything. Get the hat. Get the flag. AKA cape. Yes, everyone wears the flag as a cape. Get the pins. Get all the cool stuff that's up there. All that stuff goes to help keep this show on the air. Help us keep distributing our counter-tax propaganda information around the world. Believe me, we put it to good use. And we've got some amazing projects here that you're going to see the fruits of in the next couple months. So this is really awesome. But enough of that. On to the show. Ethan, welcome. How's it going? Yeah, you're up.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I'm going well. What about you?
Awesome. Doing pretty good. So I always like to start the shows off. I mean, this is a new thing, but I would like to always start the show off by asking you, which tax do you hate the most?
Which tax? Oh, I've got a story for you, Dan. So I mentioned I'm living in Australia, correct?
Oh, yeah. They're terrible down there, aren't they?
Have you heard about their cigarette taxes? I know, filthy habit, but have you heard the rate at which it's at?
Is it more than 50?
I think it's more than 100.
Wow.
If we're talking about, like, there's an initiative to, I guess it's to reduce smokers. What do you pay, what do you buy for... If you know, how much would you get a 20-pack of anything for here?
The last time, I don't even know how many are in a pack, but the last time I bought a pack in the U.S., it was like $10, and that had to be at least 3 or 5 years ago.
$10 U.S. dollars. I get
probably more.
Yes, I get paid in U.S. dollars, so I think I know the conversion rate straight away, which just under 15 Aussie dollars. Wrong. For a 20 pack right now, last time I checked, I paid $33.
Wow. 33 Australian?
Yeah, so maybe it's just like under 30.
Yeah, like 20, 27, 20. That's insane.
And yeah, it's part of an initiative to, I guess, reduce smoking or something. But
wow. Yeah, and that one that I said was 10, that was actually in California, which is already a pretty high tax area. I would imagine Texas would be a lot cheaper. Or, you know, Tennessee or somewhere where they grow it. Wow, that is absolutely insane. And yeah, like you said, I'm not a big fan of smoking. I've smoked, but it's gross. I hate it.
But you're also a fan of liberty, so
yeah,
you wouldn't want to...
I mean, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Hello Kitty either. That doesn't mean I should think the government should tax it out of existence.
I do. Sorry. My mind's all over the place sometimes, but just that just made me think what you're saying. You don't like something, so you don't think it should be limited, restricted, stopped. Do you have a line? I'm sorry if you've ever had this asked before. Maybe it's in accordance with the NAP. Where is your line?
Yeah, I think the line is, it's exactly that. It's when does it harm somebody else? And, you know, for cigarettes, like, you can even say there's some lines with cigarettes, right? Like, let's say I own a restaurant and I don't want smoking in my restaurant. Then I should be able to tell you, you can't do that in here. That's fine. But if it's your restaurant and you want to allow people to smoke in your restaurant, what can I say? It's not my restaurant. Like, okay, I want to go eat there, but there's all those smokers in there. Well, sorry. What can you do about that? It's your restaurant. Who am I to come to your restaurant and say, oh, I want you to cook food for me, and I demand that you make sure that nobody else is smoking while I eat it.
Like, exactly. It's
insane.
Yeah. I heard of a law. It was a U.S. state law. It was called the Freedom to Breathe Act. A while back, it banned smoking in just this one state in any public place unless it was for a stage play. And no, there was this one bar. Do you know what they did? They tried to classify their entire bar as a stage play. They got away with it for a really long time. I'll send you the link if you don't believe me, but I thought it'd amazing. Be a scary, like, yeah.
No, I believe it. And they're like, and that's the thing. Like, they try to create these restrictions and there's always a way around it. Like, even with the lockdowns and the bars, there was a bar that, like, you know, you're not allowed to buy, they weren't allowed to buy drinks or something like that. So what they did was they said, okay, all the drinks are free. You just leave a tip or you leave like a gift or donation or whatever. And I think that this was in New York during the COVID shutdowns. And I think it lasted, like, they did that. I don't know if it's still going on or what, but yeah, like, all that stuff exists. There was a restaurant that I went to that didn't have their liquor license yet. So it was a new restaurant. So they weren't allowed to sell alcohol. So what they did was they said, any dish that you order, whether it's an entree or an appetizer, comes with a free margarita. So you go to dinner with, like, you know, three or four people, you each order a meal, then each one comes with a margarita, so you get your drink. But you couldn't order a second one unless you ordered another plate of food, which was stupid, but it's just because the government is sitting there trying to say, oh, well, they don't have a license yet. So in effect, what they're doing is like, oh, you're making me order more food. I'm going to get fat and obese and I'm going to get diabetes because of your stupid laws that were trying to protect me. Like,
yeah. There's actually laws with alcoholic venues here in Australia. There's some places, I think they can only serve alcohol with a meal or something. Mm-hmm. I haven't fully read into it, but they're really trying to regulate.
That's part of the COVID, right?
No, this was just for drinking laws. Drink responsibly, their campaign or something.
Oh, wow.
It's, yeah, but I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's interesting. And I mean, like, I know they have, like, there's different restrictions. In Texas, this one's interesting. They have a 51% law, right? Where if 51% of your revenue comes from alcohol sales, you are considered a bar. And if less than that, then you're considered a restaurant. So even though you sell food and alcohol, if more than 51% comes from alcohol, you're considered a bar. Now, what's interesting is you can wear a gun into a restaurant because it's, you know, Texas is a gun-friendly place.
Yeah, Texas.
But you can't into a bar. So it's like if you walk into a restaurant that makes 49% of its revenue from alcohol, you can bring your gun in. But if they have, like, a really great month, or, like, let's say it's New Year's maybe, and that month, like, and I don't know if they do it per month or per year or whatever, but then it becomes a bar. Then it requires a different license. Then it's like, it's so stupid, but it's like, that's a good question too. Imagine if you have a restaurant and, you know, you apply for the license and you say, well, it's a restaurant, so I would expect most of my revenue is going to come from food. But then everyone just starts showing up and maybe your food is disgusting, so they don't buy it. But they drink all your alcohol. It's like, at what point, like, if it just happens on one day, do you have to go change your license? If it happens for a week, do you have to go change your license? And if they say, oh, well, you're not approved for that particular license to become a bar, so you have to shut your business down. Like, where do they draw the line with this? And it's so it's so arbitrary and nonsensical that it's, you know, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. May I ask you something?
Of course.
So, you know, I've been doing some research in anticipation for this. On your website, you said you wanted to, as an alternative to police, DEA, all those people, ATF, you used the phrase constitutional peacekeepers.
Right.
On your website, right?
Yeah.
What would constitutional peacekeeping mean to you?
So,
like, what would your system look like?
So, in the U.S., you've got, first of all, the federal government is not supposed to have police. They're not supposed to have an armed military in times of peace in the United States anywhere. They're not supposed to have police. They're not supposed to be running around enforcing laws in that way. The federal government was kind of designed to resolve disputes between states and that sort of thing. And then, of course, to provide national protection through the military, defensively only. There's nothing in there about like, oh yeah, we're going to create a law enforcement task force that makes sure nobody's creating drugs or importing drugs or, you know, any of this stuff, or to make sure that, you know, people are not building guns that we don't like. So the ATF, the DEA, all these organizations are unconstitutional. Now, when I talk about the constitutional peacekeepers, so at the state level, obviously you do have police, right? But the way the constitutions of each state are written is that you have each state is divided into counties, and this varies a little bit from state to state, but for the most part, it's about the same. You have counties. In the counties, you have sheriff, and the sheriff is the kind of the constitutional executive law enforcer or peacekeeper of the entire county. Now, within a county, you have multiple cities, and those cities, once they incorporate and they become corporations, they are granted authority by the state and regulated by the sheriff to have their own private police department. So that's when you start having city police. Now, the sheriffs actually have the constitutional authority to arrest a police officer if that police officer is breaking the law. Normally, that doesn't really happen because, you know, they're really all just working together. But the main difference being that you have law enforcement, which is people who go around looking for any violation of any law that's, you know, been not even a law, a statute that's been imagined by these legislators. Oh, you have a plant in your hand that we deemed to be illegal. We're going to now arrest you and put you in jail. That's the type of law enforcement that is, it's not constitutional, it's not right, it's not just, and it shouldn't exist. But when you do have a constitutional peacekeeper, what that is that's somebody who they're not patrolling around looking to create problems when there are none. They're sitting there enjoying their day, doing absolutely nothing until somebody calls them up and says, hey, that guy just robbed me, or that guy just killed somebody, you know, or that guy just assaulted somebody. An actual crime where there's an actual victim. And the peacekeeper would come along and say, you know, whatever, arrest somebody if they need to, bring them to trial if they need to, you know, whatever the case may be. So that's kind of what a peacekeeper is. They're there to keep the peace, not to enforce law, not to, you know, not to just wait for somebody to do something wrong and then say, you crossed the line, you owe us money. And that's really the direction that, you know, if we want to live in a peaceful and just society, that's really the type of law enforcement or peacekeeping that we need to have.
I do have to ask then, because, like, I don't know, like, just in the years since, like, my teenage years and everything, I've seen, like, at least multiple controversies of, you know, you've got Kyle Rittenhouse, George Zimmerman, the people who shot Ahmaud Arbery. They were, you know, they definitely went about it the wrong way, but they were trying to engage in community policing, and I'm worried that it could devolve into that. I'm worried people, like, how would you prevent something like that?
I think it's difficult. I mean, look, you've got, first of all, when you have a sheriff is really, if you think about it, it is community policing. It's somebody who's elected by a local community. Now, arguably, counties are really big. Maybe if you had smaller counties and you elected a sheriff for that, that would be something else. But it is kind of the idea that, you know, policing should be done locally. But what's interesting is, like, okay, so you bring up some good points, right? You bring up some examples of, like, George Zimmerman. I don't agree with what he did. But what's interesting is if you look at him, you can look at him and say, oh, well, see, he wasn't a police officer. He was just a guy trying to police the neighborhood. And look at what kind of damage he did to this young man's life. But at the same time, there are so many examples where you can look at police, the people who are supposedly trained, the people who are absolutely employed to, you know, to stop crimes, and you can look at all the criminal behavior that they have done and say, well, I thought if we hired them as police officers, then they were supposed to be more responsible and we weren't supposed to have all these problems. And I think that's really important to understand, because what if the police went away and we left it to the citizens to protect themselves, right? Would we see an increase or a decrease in all these problems? Because you have things like the George Zimmerman one, where a kid is arguably walking down the street and, you know, not doing anything, and this guy just comes up and harasses him anyway. How is that different from the police going neighborhood to neighborhood, stopping, you know, young, usually black people for just standing there, for just walking there, you know, treating them like criminals, searching their pockets, and if they resist, if they try to run, they kill them. And, you know, not to say that this happens all the time, but it's you know, it happens a lot more than not. What's really the difference? So I think we do have a problem in understanding when is it right to use deadly force. But I think that's something that, you know, we have to figure out as a society, because even though we have police who are tasked with that job, they still don't know. They still can't figure it out. And society, looking at the police, is still divided on whether or not we should cheer them on or condemn their behavior. So of course that's going to be reflected in that same way. But then you have the Kyle Rittenhouse, which was, and you know, there's a lot of debate over whether or not he went there with the intent to, like, to kill people. Based on what I saw from his actions, he didn't. He went there. He resisted all attempts to use that gun. There was a guy with a gun to his head before he fired at him. This was, like, absolutely insane, and, like, these people were pissed off. And it's, you know, we talk about, okay, well, he was bad for shooting these people. Well, what about these people who are, like, these people who are running around burning down cities? Like, you can't look at them and say, oh, well, that's justified. So, you know, there is, to what degree do you say, oh, well, you're not allowed to police the community? And this is really interesting, too, because there's this woman in Texas who was trying to pass a law to eliminate the castle doctrine. And what this means is, like, you've got somebody breaks into your house in the middle of the night. Texas says you're allowed to kill them. They're in your house in the middle of the night. You hear some noises, you wake up, you can't see all that clear because it's the middle of the night. You just woke up, so you might not even be thinking straight. You hear some noises, you walk into the other room and you see a person standing there with a mask on. What do you do? Are you gonna, like, turn on the light and say, excuse me, sir, are you armed? Like, are you gonna start asking questions? Like, or are you just gonna say, hey, I'm scared for my life, what the fuck are you doing in my house? Get out right now, or I'm going to pull the trigger. Or maybe you don't even say anything, and that's his fault. Now, a lot of people will say, and, you know, I totally have sympathy for some of these people, right? Like, I've seen families crying over, oh, he broke into the house. He was just going to steal something and leave. They didn't need to kill him. And I feel sad for them, right? I'm not going to lie. Like, it's sad. They had someone that maybe he was just going to steal something petty, but you mess with the bull, you're going to get the horns.
No, I literally, mean, I was about to say, like, as much as I would want to empathize, I don't even own that much of value. But if it had to come between my TV and this person's life, he made that decision when he...
Exactly. And that's the argument that they're trying that this woman is trying to make in Texas, that, you know, oh, well, his life is worth more than the TV. Just let him take it. And then she even said things like, you should retreat. You should leave your house and just let him take whatever he wants. Let your insurance cover it. How do you know if I have insurance? How do I know he's just there to steal the TV? Maybe he's there to kill my dog as revenge for, like, I cut him off in traffic or so. Who knows why he's there? He's not supposed to be there. Imagine if the police had a policy where, you know, if you walked into the police department with your guns out, waving them around, their policy was to retreat and just let you take whatever you want. Or even a bank, right? You walk into the bank with your guns, everybody's supposed to just say, hey, open the vault, take whatever you want. We're not allowed to do anything.
I actually think that if security doesn't, here in Australia, if there's an attempted robbery and security can't, you know, get them down instantly, I think that's actually policy.
Yeah. Yes, there are retail stores here in the U.S. that have a no-chase policy, where if somebody takes something, you're not allowed to, the employees, I don't know about security, like maybe mall security can do it, but the employees are not supposed to chase them for liability, for, you know, all kinds of reasons. And it makes sense to have that policy, but there have been examples where specific stores were, like, found out that they had that policy, and people, they went to rob them. So now they end up hiring private security 24/7 to make sure that people don't do that. It's insane.
I was going to say, on one hand, because, like, hopefully this doesn't get me in trouble, but I was 15. Every kid does. Every kid has a bit of a phase. They'll take anything that isn't tied down. Bit of a shoplifting phase, right? And I did exploit the hell out of places I knew had, like, no chase policies, that kind of thing. And I worry too much empathy. You're going to find people about the same age I was who just wanted to have free shit. But on the other hand, Castle Doctrine, you know, what if one day back when I was 15, I got too eager, thought I'd go into a house? Actually, no, then I'd deserve it. But what about looters or something? Do you think they should?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we saw in the, this is a famous example that everyone uses in the LA riots.
92?
Where you had the Korean shop owners on, you know, shooting people from the rooftops. Absolutely. It's difficult, right? I mean, for one thing, there's a lot of emotions, right? It's really a terrible situation because, one, you've got this whole, like, the spark that ignited that flame was the police beating the crap out of I don't know if we can call him innocent, but out of a person who absolutely didn't deserve that.
Wasn't he just a drunk driver?
I think he might have been on some drugs too. So
you of all people should know that shouldn't justify assault,
no,
right?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I just don't want to use the word innocent. Because he was drunk. Okay, fine. He was drunk. You know, he wasn't innocent.
Yeah.
But yeah, the penalty for that crime is not to have, you know, 10 cops beat you within an inch of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what sparked it. And then the police go to trial, the police get, they get off, right? No charges.
Didn't they look for, like, the widest jury they could?
Probably. I mean, they had the cops on recording saying the N word a million times.
Very true.
It's obvious, right? And it's like, it's so, I don't know how they could have been let go on that. But you look at that and it's like, I'm angry as hell too. But at the same time, burning down a Korean-owned grocery store, it does not get back at the police. Burn down the police station. Not that I'm actually telling anybody to do that, but...
Yeah, disavowed. But so I assume then you're probably filled with joy when you saw the Minneapolis one go up then.
I wouldn't say I was filled with joy, but I didn't shed
it didn't hurt
a
anyone
single tear.
Before you have to worry about optics, I will tell you that no one was killed or injured. Does that change your
no tears shed
approval of it? Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I am very thankful they burned down that building instead of any other building across the street. But unfortunately, that's what it escalated to. And look, it is tragic, but I mean, because you have on one hand, okay, that was terrible. Then you have people who are so enraged that they go out rioting, and it's like you can't say, it's hard to point at them and say, you know, you're wrong, because they're not thinking logically. They're thinking completely emotionally, and yes, they're going after the wrong targets, but they can't. I mean, picture this, right? You take a bull into a china shop, and the bull is just like totally chill, right? He's not wrecking anything in the china shop. But then somebody comes along with a brand and just brands his ass, and the bull just starts going crazy because he's like, holy shit, there's a hot iron on my ass.
Yeah.
And he wrecks everything in the china shop. Is that the bull's fault? Now the china shop owner is going to say, oh my God, this bull's rampaging in here. I've got to put it down. It wasn't really the bull's fault. Maybe the bull didn't deserve to die. It was somebody else who put the bull into that crazy, irrational state. And that's the person who should bear the blame. But at the same time, you can't blame the shop owner for preventing the bull from ruining his shop. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I misread. I thought that was a full sentence break. I picked the completely wrong time to you go.
No. I mean, I was just going to say, like, it's creating this situation where you've got these very conflicting, sides, but it's like neither of those sides really set out against the other side to begin with. It's almost like this, you know, this is when the government always divides us, right? The government comes out and says, hey, you should hate that person and you should hate that person. And like these two groups that were like completely peaceful, had no worry in the world about the other group, are now trying to kill each other because the government came in and did something. That government is the catalyst, and that, you know, that should be when these two groups go to war, they shouldn't be going to war against each other. They should realize what the catalyst was, and they should go to war against the catalyst.
Are we still talking about the 92 LA riots?
I think the same thing applies in all these situations, yeah.
But I've done some reading on that, watched some documentaries, nothing huge, but I heard that what had a lot to do with it, like the communities that were hurt, was kind of tensions between the Black and the Korean American communities. I remember specifically there was a lot of, what was it? This 15-year-old Black girl, she was shoplifting, kind of, you know, after she gets called out on it, kind of assaults a Korean shop owner, she shoots her. And that was still fresh in around the time. I'm just reading, because the tensions were, yep. And I quote, tensions between whites, Blacks, and Koreans over racism and economic equality were high. Oh, that's a, many Korean shopkeepers were sad, tired, and afraid because they routinely dealt with targeted harassment, shoplifting or theft, violence, and threats from their Black customers and neighbors. Yeah, there were a couple of shootings of shoplifters, and I feel like they were on the receiving end of the anger the second that, you're right, they should have directed it somewhere else, but yeah, you got these police armed to the teeth. People will go for the closest
the
victim.
The easy target. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true too. But it's, yeah, like, I mean, yeah, go ahead.
It's like, you know, there's whole that kind of thing when there's bullies at school, at least in fiction. Half the time you see they've got troubles at home. They're getting slapped right. around by an abusive father or something, right?
Right.
And they don't have the strength to deal with that. they got a much stronger person, so they lash out at, I guess, easier targets.
Yeah.
Feels yeah, like absolutely. The same thing here.
Yeah.
Even if it was politicians, nothing good. They're armed. They've got security.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a complicated situation that we're in. You know, we have a lot of issues are created over poverty. I mean, if you know, you need to pay the rent to survive, and there's no jobs available, people are going to steal. And you'll see there's a lot more stealing in places where there's more poverty, right?
In Mexico. I don't mean that sounded terrible, but you tell me.
Well, okay, I'll say this.
That accidentally sounded super racist. With the organized crime.
No, I mean, so it's interesting. Okay, where I am, there's not a whole lot of organized crime. There is some real petty theft, right? So somebody broke into my roof and they stole like a hose and an extension cable, right? Like real petty shit.
That makes me really sad because the desperation you'd have to have to take an extension cable.
Right, but I don't think it's. I don't know if that's really out of desperation because at the same time, I don't think there's. Like, okay, there's a difference between poverty in Mexico and poverty in the U.S. And this goes back to government, I think, because there are plenty of places, not even far from where I am, where it looks like campgrounds almost, right? People are just there. They start building their own little homes. Some of them are kind of shacks. They go into the city. They work. They save up some money, they buy bricks and concrete, and they start building their houses where these little shacks are, and they build and build and build. And, you know, over the course of time, they have something built. But they don't have to pay property tax. They grow a lot of their own food. They have chickens running around. There's a lot of natural food growing around here, so you can, like, pick coconuts from trees. You know, it's not to the point where, oh, how am I going to feed my kids tonight? Like, there's food everywhere. And I think when you're put into a big city environment, that kind of all that stuff goes away. And when you're put into, like, in the United States, there's no place you can go where you're not going to pay property tax, or rent. You're going to be forced off of the land. Everything is private. There is no public land that you can go to anymore. Arguably there's like some BLM land, the Bureau of Land Management.
The
other BLM. But that was where I don't know if you remember the Bundy Ranch standoff. That was on BLM land where these guys were ranchers. And they
2016, 2018.
Yeah. 2016.
Yeah. So yeah, it was pretty recent. Like when you said standoff, I was thinking Ruby Ridge, but you mean one in my lifetime, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, they were out there, they had cattle and they're grazing this public land, right? And the government was basically like, no, you can't be here. So, you know, they own everything. Like you can be in Mexico and have nothing, and it's so much easier to survive than if you're in the United States. In the United States, if you're homeless and you're sleeping in the wrong area, the police will come and kick you out. If you try build a little shelter on some piece of land, they'll kick you out. If you try to stand on a street and, you know, raise a little bit of money, they'll arrest you. It's absolutely, and in Mexico, it's like, no, people are, they have the most like amazing, like, you know, they'll sell anything on any street anywhere, which is great because it's like, they're not trying to get rich. They're not trying to become millionaires. They're just like, that's just what they do. And they're happy like that.
Yeah, I used to, sorry. This is just directly relevant. I used to, when I was a really small kid, like 10 to 12, that was probably my first subliminally libertarian view, but I was washing people's car, like just the windscreens on their cars, just to earn some money. I told them they could pay me what they wanted, but don't be a dick about it, that kind of thing. And then, I don't know, slowly I get this is the worst part about Australia. People support the overbearing government measures. They support the cigarette tax. And then they come up to me asking if I've got a permit. And I ask them if they're not in charge of permits. They're just concerned citizens. They've been brainwashed into, you know, supporting the very measures that your experience in Mexico has proven that really aren't that necessary.
Right. Yeah, no, I've seen people, there was a video, this poor guy with like his taco cart, and the police, and this is illegal on top of that. The police, like, first they told him they were going to confiscate his cart. Then they take the guy's wallet and they just pull all the money out of his wallet. You know, cause he didn't have a permit or whatever. That's absolutely insane. I mean, this is like, in Mexico, if anybody does that to you, I mean, yeah, the government, like, they have permits and shit, but for the most part, they don't bother anybody. The cartels, on the other hand, will once in a while go around and they'll harass people. If you just have a little cart and you're selling the corn, the elotes, they'll tell you, you got to give us, you know, whatever, 5,000 pesos, which is, you know, whatever. I don't know how much they're asking for, but I heard it's, you know, something like that, which is what they make in a week. Or we're going to kill you. And there was a guy who was selling his corn, and he got killed because he didn't want to pay it by the cartel. And yeah, it's a shame. But this is like, this is what the government does in every other country. And everyone thinks the cartel is terrible. And, you know, I'm not going to say they're that great. But this is what the government is doing in every other country, except they won't actually kill you. But they will. What show was I watching? It was a movie. Oh shit! What was that movie?
Just throw out plot points. I'll try and guess with you.
It was Matthew McConaughey, and he was like, he was helping to free some slave refugees, like in the Civil War. And there was a part where they were all hiding in the middle of the swamp somewhere, and
was it Free State of Jones?
Maybe.
After serving as a medic in the Civil War, Newton Knight returns home to safeguard his fam. Forms a rebellion against the corrupt Confederate government.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, right. Sorry, I had to find it for you.
No. And there's this great scene where like they have this like, it's a wagon, like a horse-drawn wagon, full of corn, and they're taking it down the road. And one of the Confederate armies, you know, comes up and says. That's ours. We're going to take that because we need to feed our soldiers. And McConaughey, he's like, that's his thing. He's like, if you're telling me you're going to take this corn, we can't feed our pigs. If we can't feed our pigs, we can't eat during the winter. If we can't eat during the winter, we're going to die. So if you steal this corn from us, you're threatening to kill us. And that connection is really important because when the government comes to somebody and says, you can't sell your corn on the street because you don't have a permit, that is a death sentence for some people. I mean, maybe not, because maybe he's going to go off and he's going to find some other illegal way, you know, to survive. But that's essentially what that is. You're telling him this is your only means. This is a legitimate means, right? Imagine if he's like, well, I can't sell my corn on the corner. I'm just going to start robbing people instead.
I would honestly hope that he starts with stealing before robbing.
What's the difference?
But yeah, I agree.
Robbing is armed?
No, stealing is, you know, if you're not home for a month and then someone goes in and 5 minutes and takes something.
Right.
No conflict. It still does it violate the NAP? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
It does, but the chance of violence, I guess, is less.
Right. Yeah, sorry, it's definitely.
ADHD, it happens.
That's an interesting scenario, actually, because there's, you know, I use this one to make fun of libertarians, because they're like, yeah, the nap. Okay. If you're hiking through the woods and like a snowstorm comes along that you weren't expecting, and there's a cabin, we all know breaking and entering is wrong, but are you going to break and enter to survive? And the answer is going to be yes. Now, when you're in there, you're probably not, like, I mean, if you're a good person, you're probably not going to rob the person blind and take everything of value. Maybe you're just going to seek shelter, and then in the morning you'll leave. Maybe you'll eat a little bit of food if you have to be there for an extended period of time. But, you know, that's it. Maybe you'll leave something in exchange for the damage. Hopefully you'll knock first. So if there is somebody home, you're not going to scare the crap out of them and have to worry about getting shot. There's so many different ways to handle that situation that prevent that kind of that violent outcome. But at the same time, there are situations where it's going to be, okay, yeah, that looks like a NAP violation, but it was in terms of survival. And actually, the reason I bring this up is because when I talk to libertarians is because, you know, they're always talking about, you know, oh, socialism sucks and Bernie Sanders is bad and all this other stuff. And I actually use this analogy because to the people that Bernie Sanders is pandering to, those people are actually, they're in that survival mode. So Bernie Sanders is going to him like, you're going to die. You can't afford healthcare. You're going to die. So you need to elect me. And it's you have to understand where these people are coming from because they're using the same thing that anybody would fall for. You put anybody in that survival mode and anybody can be manipulated by their animalistic instincts, their non-NAP based drive for survival. And but that's all fundamentally created by the government by saying you have to have a license to survive.
The snowball thing, any of the libertarians you've said that to, how many of them have unironically, like, sincerely said that they would freeze or starve or die out of respect for the NAP?
Okay. Not a one. Yeah.
I can imagine being stubborn enough to do that. Like, I had a bit of a neocon phase where I said I'd support getting deported back to where I was born. Just to win an argument. So... that no one would die on that hill? Well, nobody?
I don't know. Because when I've brought it up, I don't think I've ever brought it up in an offensive way where, you know, where I was, yeah, I'll prove to you that there's a point where you're going to violate the
law.
I haven't really brought it up like that. I brought it up as an example to lead into the whole survival mode thing. But I think that just goes to show you, too, that's, you know, that's an interesting way to have a conversation with somebody because, like, if I want to tell you something and if I want to, you know, influence your opinion and get you to think that, you know, think either in the way that I'm thinking or I want you to be to consider a new idea. If I come at you offensively, like, you're wrong and let me tell you why, you're probably not going to listen to me. But if I come at you and say, okay, look, let me ask you a question. And then I give you a little story and, you know, walk you through, then you might actually agree with me. And this is another area where I talk shit about libertarians all the time because they generally like to come out offensively and say, you're wrong and let me tell you why. And, you know, maybe they're right, but you're not going to win anybody over that way.
Yeah, how are you going to get anyone to listen? I've,
yeah,
made a lot of mistakes like that. I never did debating. I always debated in an unstructured way, which basically meant shouting matches. No, so I really wish I got your advice a lot sooner.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's something we learn. I mean, I used to do that all the time, too. I used to like, type in all caps about, you know, you're wrong, and you're an asshole, and you're an idiot, and, you know, all this other stuff. And at some point, you know, I don't know. I think part of it just comes from... going through these experiences and realizing that, hey, that doesn't work. And, you know, trying to learn new ways to communicate with people to really get these ideas across.
I need to ask, sorry, it's just I'm worried that you got a limited time slot and I have to, while it's still on my mind. You mentioned Bernie and I did want to talk about all the third parties other than the, you know, the LP, because that's the only one that even shows up. If you made like a pie chart, that's right. The only one that would even look statistically big enough to be represented, the Libertarian Party. But the other parties, there's some I assume you really wouldn't align with, like, let's say, the Socialist Party. Right. What's stronger in that at that point, your hatred for the two-party system or your, you know, your anti-socialism kind of thing? If it wasn't the presidency, if it was just, like, one Senate seat or something up for grabs, right, who would you pick?
Oh, you're opposed, I see. Because
you're opposed to socialism, but you're also opposed to the two-party system. I'm asking you which opposition is stronger.
So would I vote for somebody from the Socialist Party just to get the Democrat out?
If they had a good chance.
I don't know. I mean, I like to say that the Republicans and Democrats are really the same. And so, you know, a Socialist Party would also kind of be the same. So I think to that degree, like, I mean, I've never been a fan of, you know, oh, we have to vote for this guy so we can get Obama out, or we have to vote for this guy so we can get Trump out. I've never really been a fan of that. And so I would think that this would be the same thing. I'm really more, you know, I would rather other people as well vote for what they really believe in. If nothing else, so that there's an actual metric to see how many people actually support this idea.
But what if the ideas aren't represented enough? I mean, that's where I think Trump swept through. There was a lot of, for years, kind of, he represented a lot of ideas, attitudes, viewpoints that weren't being represented by the Republican Party. And if they didn't feel represented, imagine what, let's say, an actual, someone who believes in genuine Fidel Castro socialism, how do you think they'd feel?
Right.
It's like, well, I mean, the Overton window of acceptable ideas. If someone's willing to accept, wouldn't you vote for them to just push an idea that isn't two-party? If they'd be willing, if you show that people are willing to accept one, not outlandish, but I guess more alternative, obscure political ideology, wouldn't that then make people more receptive to yours in the future? Especially when you consider how pro-gun socialists, let's say, this case might be.
You're asking, would I... So if I supported somebody just for the sake of breaking up the two-party system, would that make it more likely that somebody else is going to support, say, a libertarian, when there's only a libertarian running against the two-party system, to break up the two-party system?
I think the idea would be the ideas of, let's say, policies... I mean, come on, before, when I was like 13, all I knew from libertarianism was that one clip of, you might have been there, the guy, he was a Republican, he got booed for saying that there should be driver's licenses.
Right.
Yeah, come on, that one's gone, who was it? He was a Republican.
What's his name?
I think he won your guy's whole not, Gary Johnson.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, so maybe not that, but if you said one day, I don't think any firearm should be banned, which I assume you would believe in.
Right.
Wouldn't that sound a lot more easy to digest right after someone said, we should genuinely tax Jeff Bezos 95%? One absurd idea makes another seem more reasonable, more acceptable, more palatable to people who are just used to, I guess, mainstream two-party politics.
I think, actually, I think there's a bigger problem than that in those two. Not the fact that they're...
I hate to interrupt you, but your microphone, you sound like you're underwater.
Oh, shit. Is it any better?
Sorry. Yeah, much better. I didn't mean to interrupt again, but I had to.
No, all good. So I think... okay, so you talk about, you know, tax Bezos 100% or don't ban any guns. I think the dichotomy there is actually, if that's what you would call it, I think the difference there is not so much that they're extremes, but that in one of them, you're saying we're going to do something, and in the other, it sounds like, oh, we're just not going to do anything. And I actually learned
I was cherry picking its examples. I was just trying to think of two absurd ideas.
This is actually the entire libertarian platform. And I actually learned this from somebody who's probably more of like a socialist. I think they were like a Bernie Sanders supporter. And I learned this because I told them, yeah, I'm going to be running for president, but I'm just going to like, well, what are you going to do as president? Well, nothing, because the federal government shouldn't be doing anything. And so her position was, well, how is that going to make my life better if you're just not going to do anything? But this is the entire libertarian platform in a nutshell, is we're just going to leave you alone. And to most people, like, I've got problems here. I can't afford to send my kids to college. They've got all these problems. And when you tell them, like, hey, we're just going to do nothing. We're not going to ban any guns. Like when you say that, it's just kind of like, well, it doesn't sound like you're going to do anything. This guy over here, he's going to tax the crap out of this guy and give me some stuff. It's more proactive. It sounds like there's actually something being done. So I think there's that. But back to your point, if there's a pool of crazy people saying crazy things, I think that's actually more dangerous. Because you're being associated as crazy. So people are going to say, oh, well, I mean, all these people are crazy. So let's try libertarian this year and then we'll try communist next year. I think it kind of puts them in the same boat, which I don't think. I think libertarians are crazy. I think the libertarian philosophy is not crazy, if that makes sense. So I don't know. It's really difficult. I can't really think of a situation where I would go out and vote for just anybody just to break up the two-party system. Now, there are some groups. Yeah, go ahead.
Trump. He's shaken the whole thing up because he was unelectable in almost every way. Mm-hmm. He trying to pose as a devout Christian after his affairs, the abortions he's had. I'm not against either of I'm against affairs, not abortion. you know, all the sexual assault scandals, the refusing in every way, including whole media on his side, the remarks he made, he shouldn't have been electable.
Right.
And yet he was, and now I feel like it has, and I don't just mean like right wing far-right extremism, it has made ideas more acceptable to people after they hear the shit he says. So I'm trying to imagine that on a new scale.
So let me go back to this. His policies were, I'm going to do something, right? I'm going to build a wall. What else did he say? I don't even remember. He's going to do stuff, right? He's going to build stuff. It's going to be huge. He's going to make America great again, right?
Did he even have any other campaign promises?
Right?
Wow.
And it's proactive. It's what he's going to do, right? And make America great again is like so ambiguous. It's like, yeah, that sounds wonderful. Let's do it. Arguably, the Democrats would be sitting like, I said this as a joke, and they're actually doing this now. I want to make America great again hats that look exactly the same, but they're blue. And sell them to Democrats because, I mean, to them, making America great again is like, you know, like putting the tax rate back up to 90%, which it was for a while. And now they're actually making one, make America.
I'm going to find it. I know what you're talking about. I forgot the slogan.
It's so close.
It's Biden fans reject blue anti-MAGA hats as. Sorry, just found this article.
What does it say?
Made America great already.
Right.
It got actually rejected by, you know, these Hollywood celebrities. They're always Democrats, but they actually spoke out against it. But you were saying?
Wow, that's surprising. But yeah, it's you know, because ultimately what it is like. They're want like, yeah, everybody wants America to be great. They just have a completely different vision of what it means to be great.
Why did that make me think so deeply? You're right. You're 100% right about that.
Here, someone got a comment here. The only crazy thing in the world is fanatism. I think you mean to say fanaticism.
Fanaticism. Yeah, I think.
We just need to have respect to each other, to each other's opinions, and learn to listen and respect everyone. I myself like the Republicans, but I agree in many things with you. Greetings from Greece. Hey, awesome.
May I ask his name?
Greece is watching. I could not read it if I tried.
Okay, I was just asking if it was one of your guys or one of, I don't know, I think I mentioned that I'd have you on, I thought you were coming on my show today, so maybe they were like, where's the show, and looked for you, maybe they found you.
Awesome. I don't know. And yeah, for anyone listening, we're actually going to rebroadcast this on both shows, so.
Yeah.
Oh, he's saying Lampros Rosis.
All right. May I
I don't know if he's saying if that's his name or, yeah.
I couldn't tell you. May I please ask?
Yeah.
I got to do this because I got nervous just before this, worried I'd stutter, say things wrong. So I was going on Omegle just to warm myself up to conversation, right?
Where?
It's Omegle. Have you?
Never heard of it.
So you go on there on your webcam turns on, and then you get randomly matched with a stranger. It's a video call.
Interesting.
It's about 90%, but there is a large amount of it's the internet is what you'd expect. Men jacking right. off. Half of it's that, but once you wade through that, you talk to strangers, and first thing I see, this guy, not first thing, there were a few dicks first, but after a few dicks, there's this guy with the don't tread on me flag, right?
Nice.
And I was bragging. I was like, I asked, you're a libertarian man. I said, do you know Dan Taxation is Theft Behrman? Do you know him? And I was like, oh, cool. I'm just about to do podcast with him. And he asked if you could, Mick Joyce Simp. He asked me to tell you that he says hi. That's literally it. Like,
nice.
You know what I mean? I just had to.
Yeah, well, tell him I said Taxation is Theft.
Yeah, I'm probably going to send him this link, so that works. Easy.
That's all awesome.
Right. So, where were we? We had, like, two people to address in a row.
Yeah, no, and before that, I was trying to figure out how to get back to what we were talking about. So I was going to say this. There's the Constitution Party, and I don't agree with them on everything, but I think, you know, if they were running for something, I'd vote for them. Just because, you know, I mean, I guess it would kind of be a protest vote at that point, because realistically, I don't know. I mean, if I knew who was running, yeah, maybe. If I walked into the ballot box and I was like, okay, this, you know, looking at who's running, oh, this guy's running and he's with the Constitution Party. It's kind of like, okay, well, I know there's a lot of libertarians running who aren't really libertarians, so this guy is running with the Constitution Party. Is he really constitutional?
Yeah.
You know, there's still kind of that. But at the same time, I don't know. I might look at that like, hey, this guy's not going to win anyway. Let me give him a protest vote. But then there's the Putney Swope, which is... it's this movie from like the 70s. Robert Downey Jr.'s dad actually directed it. And it starts out, there's like, it's this advertising company, and the CEO dies. And so all the board members have to vote on who the new guy is going to be, and they all want it. And so there's this rule that says, you know, you have to vote for one person to be the next CEO, but you can't vote for yourself. And so everybody ended up voting for this guy Putney Swope, who was like the guy that everybody, I don't want to say they hated him, but like they were like, you know, yeah, he's never,
he was not
win.
A favorite to, he was not a favorite to get the company.
No,
everyone threw away their vote
on him, and he won because of that. And then he absolutely destroyed the company. it's kind of funny, but like, you know, realistically, that's not going to happen. We've got too many fanatics for both sides. I don't see that ever happening. But, I mean, like, even Trump, like, if you think about it, if you think about how many like, think about how many votes he got and compare that to how many people would have voted Republican, like, literally if there was a turd sandwich running. Like, he didn't win that many more votes. Yeah, people got out. They were more excited. They were, you know, happy, waving flags, going to rallies and everything. It's not like he got any Democrats to switch over. You know, some of the people in the middle might have been like, yeah, he's better than this other guy.
Did he get many libertarian voters?
Actually, he did, which was kind of.
And
weird.
Then he screwed them over with the bump stocks, right?
Yeah, and some of them still love him for, you know, whatever reason. But I think that's still I don't know. Like, if he ran as an independent, I don't think he would have had a chance.
He tried in 2000 to run as an independent.
Did he really?
Yeah, the fact that you haven't heard of it proves how much it failed.
Wow.
Are you searching? Because I have too.
I'm about to. And this was, wait, this actually makes a little bit more sense.
Yep. What party was he with? So he was still with Roger Stone at the time, but he was running as with the Reform Party.
Okay. Yeah, not a chance in hell. But so this is interesting because I've told this story before. In like the early probably like around 2007, 2006, before the housing crisis, I was in LA. I was trying to become an entrepreneur and make some money, and I was going to there was this thing, and they were like, you know, yeah, come on out. We're gonna have a free weekend, and you can go to see all these classes, how to run a business, how to avoid paying taxes, you know, blah blah blah. Well, it turned out it was actually like Trump's university, or somehow affiliated with it, and Trump was the keynote speaker. And I went to go see it, and towards the end of the speech, everyone just started cheering, President Trump, President Trump. And this was in like 2006-ish. And like, and I never really thought much of it until like I started seeing that again in 2016. And I was like, that's weird. But it makes more sense now that he actually ran in 2000, because maybe some of those people were his diehard fans already. I don't know.
Yeah, it was a TV star's publicity stunt back then. Like,
right.
I don't know. When I used to listen to a lot of hip hop, every Eminem comment section in it says Eminem for president, Shady for president, Kanye.
Right.
He actually did that one, but
yeah.
So the whole chanting President Trump thing doesn't seem too absurd to me, only because of how I see people react to regular celebrities.
Right. Yeah, that's true too. I've seen like a lot of comedians, like, you know, even like, man, like Chris Rock or Dave Chappelle, like, you know, yeah, this guy.
Aren't there like 10 comedians that are actually a name in the whole of the industry?
Yeah, probably like international, like massive name. Yeah, I'm sure if you go to like any of their, you know, any of their videos that have like 100 million views on YouTube, and like you scroll down, you're gonna see someone say, yeah, they should have run for president. Especially if they're doing like a, you know, a joke on like the healthcare system or something like that.
Okay, now I'm wondering, what inspired you to run for president? Shit, I didn't even see you on the, like I said, my research was surface level, but I didn't see you on the 2016 ballot. So what made you decide to run this?
Yeah, so no, I wasn't. I actually, when Gary Johnson got his nomination in 2016, that was kind of like my snapping moment where I was like, man, fuck this Libertarian Party. I'm running for president next time.
Is it because he said he supports driver's licenses?
Yeah, no, it was actually, I want to say it was before that, but maybe that was during the, yeah, because I don't think I heard him say that in person. But what it was I was actually going around to a few of the state conventions, Texas especially. I was there taking pictures and everything. I met Gary a few times, and in Texas, I gave him one of these, I always look around like, do I have one here? I know I've got one somewhere. It's a $100 bill. It's a fake $100 bill folded in half, that like you throw on the ground, and when you pick it up, it's like you open it up and it says taxation is theft inside.
So they think they're getting a $100 bill and you give them false hope.
Exactly. Ooh. So I gave one to Gary Johnson, and I think he got excited. He thought it was a campaign donation, and maybe that's why he was so pissed off about it. But he opened it up and he's like, that's not funny. And then I gave one to John McAfee, and like, And like I heard, he didn't hear it because he was just looking at this $100 bill. But I heard Gary Johnson from across the room, "Don't open it, it's worthless." And I was like, "You dick." And then John opens it up and he's like, "Ah," he's like, he loved it. And I was like, "Wait a minute, okay, so okay, whatever." Gary Johnson, and I was working on McAfee's campaign too. I started a little bit after that.
Wait, working? So this is 2016. What do you mean by working on?
So I started volunteering for his campaign. I helped him do. At that point, I wasn't working on his campaign, but like just before the national convention, one of my friends that was like, I want to say his campaign manager, they were like, "Yeah, you got to help out. I think she might have been a regional campaign manager. I got involved, and I ended up, helping to organize to buy like some swag to give out at the thing, and we, I helped set up the table at the national convention and that sort of stuff. So at that point I was like, yeah, you know what? Okay. Gary Johnson, he's not a fan of the taxationist theft, whatever. He's not perfect. If he wins, I'll still support him, but I'm going to push as hard as I can to get McAfee to win. Obviously McAfee didn't win. Gary Johnson gets on stage to make his big, announcement, his big thank you. Thank you for selecting me. And then as everyone starts cheering and everyone's like, yeah, we picked this great guy to represent the Libertarian Party, he says, "And taxation is theft." And I was like, "Oh, you asshole. Now you're just pandering." That was kind of like my breaking point. I was like, "Fuck you, dude. You're a total literally lying piece of shit."
That's literally your middle name. That'd be like if someone at the end of a campaign speech screams out, "Joel." I would feel called out. I would feel called out eventually. But
well, I hadn't changed my name.
I have
name
to
yet.
Ask.
But yeah.
No, but I thought I heard something of yours. You said you don't recognize you haven't changed it governmentally, but you don't exactly recognize the government in some ways.
Well, I mean, it's my name, it's not theirs. So why, like, people have this idea that like if you want to change your name, you have to go to the government and ask permission. But it's my name, it's not theirs. Why do I need to ask them for anything?
That just made me think of something, which is gender transitioning and that kind of thing. I assume you're for it.
I'm not for it. I'm not against it.
You're pro-choice, and that not just in the abortion way. You're like pro-choice of everything, including, you know what I mean? If someone tells you one day, if I switched gender, asked you to use the female pronouns, you would, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I mean, let me go back on pro-choice for a second. I hate using the word pro-choice, actually, because I think it's a loaded
word.
I used it wrong.
But
to your point, if somebody chooses to switch their gender, yeah, I'm totally cool with that. And if somebody wants me to call them something, fine. Because I'm not an asshole.
exactly.
You know?
If
your name's Robert and you want me to call you Bob, I'm going to call you Bob. Like, you know, unless I'm mad at you. And then I'm like, "Robert, what did you do?"
Yeah. No, even when I butted heads with pretty alt-right people back when that was actually a thing. Even then, I never got it. They would go out of their way. They'd get the new name pronouns right. And they would correct themselves just to be a dick. to someone who's not even insulting them.
Yeah. It's insane.
Who has that much effort?
So think about it. Like, it's really the same as, you know, somebody go, like, I mean, it's an insult, right? I think it's the same as any insult. Calling someone the N-word, calling someone fat or ugly, like, it's really the same thing. And it's like, why do you have to do that? And you know, some people are like, I don't know, some people are worried that like, oh, it's going to change my entire reality into like, you know, my entire world's going to crumble. And it's like, okay, that's a little bit irrational.
If it's like your wife or your husband, maybe it would, but if it's like a coworker, then no, your world's not going to crumble. It's not the end of the world,
right? And you don't want strippers teaching your kids, you know, whatever. Okay, fine. Like, you know, I get it. There's like some awkward extreme cases in there, but that's not necessarily the norm.
Find another library.
Was that? Yeah, who's funding
they could
the
just,
library?
Like, no, they could just find another library.
Yeah.
If they don't like the one that the drag queen's reading at, they can just go to another one.
Right, which is a perfect reason why the government shouldn't be funding those, because then, you know, you don't have so many people. Look, I've known businesses that were, started by two people, and, you know, very simple businesses. We're going to sell a product, and then ultimately they get into a fight because of how it's being managed. Now imagine you have 1,000 people who own a library through the government, and all 1,000 of those owners are, you know, fighting with each other over what type of child education or entertainment should we have here. It's absolutely insane. Whereas if it's private, you've got one owner, they're going to do whatever they want, and you can decide whether or not you like it. And if you don't like it, you can go start your own. And this is like unbelievable too, but this is like, you know, over so many years, our history gets lost in this, but you've got the very first libraries in the United States, I think, were started by, I want to say, Benjamin Franklin, as a charitable effort. I could be mixing up my history. I could be off by centuries or whatever, but
I couldn't tell you.
That was a thing. And, you know, I hear this argument all the time from those who support, I know I'm totally going off on a tangent here, but people who support government schools and government libraries say things like, well, we have to pay our taxes because who else is going to make these things? And I don't want to grow up in a world full of stupid people. Well, you're not the only person who doesn't want to live in a world full of stupid people. And a lot of those people who don't want to live in a world full of stupid people also have money, and they create schools and libraries so that they won't have to live in a world full of stupid people.
In a world without government, like, the only reason I would ever support even government owning some things like libraries is me worrying that without government, there would only be bookstores. Do you think libraries, like...
No, I mean, that was the... there are libraries that are created as charities that are not part of government.
All right.
They've usually got better books.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying I do. I'm saying the only reason I ever would...
Right.
In the case of libraries, not want them to be like that is if I was worried that there wouldn't be no free option.
Right. Yeah. But hey, the library is not free either. I mean, you know, you lose a book or you don't return it on time, they're going to make you pay.
They don't enforce it here.
Really?
Like, I was 12. You can actually rent out the magazines. I cut some things out, put them on my wall, then I returned them and everything, or some I forgot to return. Then they sent a couple of emails, but eventually if my parents didn't like chase me up on it and make me go out and wash those cars, then nothing would have happened. I just wouldn't have been able to borrow more books.
Right. Nice.
Sorry.
What's the time on your show? How long do you run?
I'm on 117, but we did start just before your intro, so we could average that out of maybe 112. What about you?
You usually do it for about an hour. I usually do it for about an hour.
Can I ask one last question then?
Yeah, go for it.
Just like, I want to end on one last topic then. It's the gubernatorial thing, because I'm just wondering what made you switch from running for president. And yeah, you didn't get the Libertarian nomination. What made you, I heard you registered, you said you were still running for president as an independent for a while. Is that still going on?
That was for about 10 minutes.
I'm sorry. I read. And
no, that's cool.
I'm glad I can clear things up straight to the source.
Yeah, no, because a lot of people were confused by that. And that was really... I said that because I wanted to make sure that everybody knew that this is not like, you know, I'm not going to disappear. And we see this with libertarians. I mean, Gary Johnson's gone now. We had our candidate this year, Jo Jorgensen. She's disappeared. I haven't heard anything from her. I mean, I get.
Wait, what
I get
do you mean by that? Emails. Like, I saw her when I watched the election footage.
Yeah, I mean, she's not going to be doing anything. I mean, if she shows back up, people are saying, yeah, she should run again in 2024. I don't know if she's going to. I really don't want to say anything bad about her. She's a very nice person. I don't want to say that I'm this like amazing, attention grabbing person either, but, she didn't have like anything that really grabbed attention from anybody. She didn't really have a fanatic following. The Libertarian Party had a fanatic following that supported her, but she didn't really create any sort of fanatic following, which, you know, as much as I hate fanaticism, it's necessary, especially if we're going to beat these big guys. But she's gone. Like, what's she going to be doing? Even if she does decide to run in 2024, she's not in the race right now. She's not out doing anything. She's not making appearances. Yeah, she's gonna go back to being a university professor and quietly doing her job. Meanwhile, I'm gonna be out here promoting liberty everywhere.
No, exactly. You could have easily, what, you're a software engineer or something.
Yeah.
I remember.
Software engineer.
Yeah, and also podcasts, but I assume that's inherently libertarian related, right? You were never just talking, doing gaming streams. Yeah, so, no, I get that. It's a career for you, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, oh, shit, that sounds so evil now, because now I sound like a career politician.
What I mean is, not a career politician, that's not what I meant.
I'm a career activist. Let's go with that.
Genuinely, why wouldn't you be? Like, you're not a politician,
right? Yeah,
I mean, that sounds bad again, but you don't hold any office yet,
right?
I'm rooting for you with 2022, but you are not a politician yet.
Yeah, no, and I hate it when people call me a politician, because I really don't want to be. I mean, like, politicians run so that they can be in office and they can have power and they can make all these, you know, big deals, big corporations, and make all kinds of, like, you know, backroom deals and, you know, make billions off of it. That's not what I'm about at all. I'm an activist who seeks offices for the purpose of promoting these ideas. And I know it's confusing. And I hate labels to begin with, so that makes it even more difficult. But yeah, so
are you telling me if you were elected to some kind of office, like, I don't know, one day Trump, Biden, and Georgia are all drop dead, you got the nomination and you won the entire U.S. presidency, are you telling me you wouldn't, like, I don't know, buy some guns, buy something with that presidential salary if you had more money coming in suddenly, more than you?
Right. No, I actually just made a commitment on Twitter yesterday. Or was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday. That I'm not going to take a penny out of the gubernatorial salary until the entire state raises all of its revenue without coercion. So absolutely, because who knows? I mean, I am an entrepreneur. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'll figure out some non-offensive way to. I mean, look, even if it came down to, if I get enough votes to win, I should have enough support to continue donating to my personal account, and say, hey, this is going to pay my salary, right? Continue donating. It's not to my campaign. It's to my personal account. Continue donating. And if you feel that I'm doing a shitty job, stop donating. And when I run out of money, I'll have nothing to do but retire or quit. And, you know, whoever's next in line is going to take my place. And then you can have your country back, have your state back.
I know you do. I know it doesn't fit like the libertarian Wall Street stereotype, but you don't seem like someone who lives beyond their means or even at the absolute limit of their.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
what I mean is you haven't done any cocaine since we've started here, and I don't see any strippers in the background.
They're in the
so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know,
it's not a life of excess, which is, I guess, what a lot of people associate, especially with, like, that Boogaloo meme shit, the Boog Boys and all that.
Right. Yeah, and I
you've seen the memes, right?
Yeah.
Who am I kidding? Yeah. Of course you have.
Like, yeah, yeah. Actually, well, I'm not gonna go there. There's a
you recreated one, but with a target.
No, I know. I just
I can make my assumptions.
I know so many people that are just like, you know, they spend every penny they have on guns. But yeah, it's yeah. So there's a business that I'm starting right now. A couple of them actually. But one of them is with some of my libertarian friends in Uganda, and the purpose of it is we're going to be importing art from Uganda. There's some amazing artists out there, painters, sculptors, you know, really, really great, like, handmade stuff. And we're going to be importing it to the US where they can actually sell it for, you know, a very good price. Cause Uganda's, you know, it's a third world country, which I hate saying, cause that's really like such a fucking shitty thing to say about a place, actually.
No, that time, didn't it originate from the Cold War?
Yeah, anybody who's not a nuclear or communist state, but it's like, now it's kind of, it's
yeah, now it's a synonym. Yeah. It is pretty much used as a synonym for
shithole.
Shit. Yeah.
But, and it's really, it's not, I mean, it's very poor, but it's also, it's very rich in resources. You've got tyrants who are selling those resources off to other countries, like China and Russia. And they're leaving no benefit for the people there. So this is something that we're doing where we're actually going to hopefully be able to sell these paintings, at a very high value. And most of that money is going to go back to the artists and the communities. So it's a way that, you know, we go around all the dictators, all the import taxes and everything else. And we actually create, you know, some economic value, that's really going to help people. And these are people who are kind of, you know, politically in my area as well. So that's going to help them, you know, start fighting for liberty in Uganda and other parts of Africa as well.
Just be careful if you're talking about smuggling by dictators. I don't want to see your death on the dark web, okay? Man, we're reaching the hour and a half mark, and I desperately have to pee. You reckon we can... Sorry, I know you're a busy guy, but more importantly, I got to pee.
No, this is awesome. Let's wrap this up. Okay, let's do this, since we're broadcasting on both. One, let's say we'll come back and do this again sometime.
I was about to say you're welcome anytime.
But let's do this. I'm gonna give my show outro, and then you give your show outro.
I only have an intro. I don't have my outro. Is bye, guys.
All right.
What's your outro?
Thank you everybody for tuning in. If you like what you heard, make sure to share this with your friends. This outro is gonna be good for you too. Whatever channel you're listening on. Go to taxationistheft.info and make sure to buy all of our really awesome swag. And go to the podcast, Taxation is Theft, wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And remember to subscribe to this. Head over to youtube.com/taxationistheft and subscribe there. And of course, check out the new channel on YouTube. It's called Tit Clips. And that's where we've got all the really short clips from these shows that are really awesome. And Ethan, why don't you go ahead and plug your website, and where can people subscribe to your podcast?
But first off, I forgot that TIT was an acronym for a second. Like, I mean, it's on your hat, but for a sec, I forgot TIT Clips. I was wondering what kind of business you're running on this side. Anyways, you know, if you guys, if you're from here, if you just, this, I'm stuttering, I'm so sorry. Okay, guys, if this is like your first time hearing me, then if you'd like to hear more, you can find me on Spotify under the podcast name Venpilled. That's like red pilled, but with a Venn diagram, V-E-N-N. Or you can find me on Instagram at Venn Diagram Boy, and YouTube under the same handle. Thanks. Sorry.
Awesome. All right.
That was a stutter and a half. Are we off the clock?
All good. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night. See you next time. Taxation is Theft.